Hello and welcome to Radio Disclosure. Our guests this week include Emmy Award-winning science reporter Linda Moulton Howe and her report on unusual animal deaths in southern Colorado. Also, Dr. Jason Rand and his new book about Planet X and the Mayan calendar. You don't want to miss this episode. We'll be right back with our guests and this week's host, Matt Aaron, right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Radio Disclosure, brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, Tux-Support.com, PMC Science, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributor for the finest in amateur radio equipment. It's the 4040. It's a new 40-meter monoband antenna. It looks just like the Adventurer or the TW2010. It's the perfect antenna for high-performance DX communications in a portable package. This antenna system is ideal for camping, emergencies, or permanent installation where you gotta go stealth. 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz without the necessity of either manual band changing or the need for a controller. Just attach the feed line and you're ready to talk. That's the Trans World Adventurer 4040. Go to their website. Take a look. Transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
On March 18th, 2009, Corpus Christi police investigated a cat found cut in half near the city's Club Estates Elementary School on the south side of Corpus Christi. The cat was cut cleanly through its middle with a smooth incision. Its organs had been removed and were not at the scene. No blood, no tracks. 31 cat mutilations have been reported to Corpus Christi police since April 2008. 12 of those 31 cats have been found in the same general area on the south side of the city. Police have no suspects and have not made any arrests. Anyone with information, please call Corpus Christi Crime Stoppers at 361-888-8477. Over the years, recurring cycles of cat mutilations have been reported in England, Canada, and many states in America. Texas has had repeated cat mutilations in Corpus Christi, San Antonio, Austin, and Plano, suburb north of Dallas. In 1991, 1993, and the late 1990s, Texas police received dozens of reports about cats found cut in half, usually with the front half near the owner's yard or sidewalk. Plano Police Detective Mike Box also had missing reports of more than 80 domestic house cats that wore collars and ID tags, but were never found. Detective Box investigated satanic cult activities, but could never find any evidence that connected them to the mutilated and missing cats and other animals such as dogs. Only 4 days before the half cat was found in Corpus Christi, on Sunday, March 15, 2009, I was in Weston, Colorado, about a half hour west of Trinidad, to meet rancher Mike Duran. He found one of his cows dead and mutilated the week before on Sunday, March 8th. He did not see the mother with her calf during feeding on Saturday and guesses she died Friday night, March 6th. Mike is 49 years old, born and raised in Weston, Colorado, where you can see the White Cap Sangre de Cristo Mountains from his pasture. Beyond those mountains to the west are the Great Sand Dunes and the town of Alamosa in the San Luis Valley, where in September 1967, ranchers Burl and Nellie Lewis made international news when their three-year-old Appaloosa horse named Lady was found dead and stripped of flesh from the neck up. All of her chest organs had also been bloodlessly and surgically removed. The exposed skeleton was so white and clean, it looked like the bones had laid in the sun for days. But the ranchers knew she was well and alive only two nights before. Now she laid in dry, dusty soil with no tracks around her, not even her own. Lady's last track stopped 100 feet southeast of her dead and mutilated body. Burl Lewis told me in a phone interview back in the 1980s, quote, It looked like she jumped around in a circle, but there was nothing else, no tracks of any kind between there and where we found her. It was clean all around her body, close quote. However, 40 feet south of her body was a broken bush. Burl told me, quote, around the bush was a 3-foot circle of 6 or 8 holes in the ground about 4 inches across and 3 to 4 inches deep, close quote. Burl, Nelly, and other ranchers in the San Luis Valley said that summer of 1967, very strange aerial objects were seen over the valley, and the ranchers wondered if the UFOs had something to do with the bizarre death of Lady. That's why the Pueblo, Colorado Chieftain newspaper headlined, quote, Dead Horse Riddle Sparks UFO Buffs, close quote. Unexplained aerial lights, beams, discs, triangles, and other odd aerial phenomena have been linked with the worldwide animal mutilation since at least the 1950s. Denver, Colorado pathologist and hematologist John Altshuler, M.D., now deceased, was so curious about the unusual horse death in the San Luis Valley back in 1967 that he privately drove down to Alamosa to see the horse. In my first book, An Alien Harvest, I reprinted a September 1967 eyewitness report written by Dr. Altshuler about what he found. He wrote, quote, when I got close to the horse, I could see that it was also cut from the neck down to the base of the chest in a vertical, clean incision. At the edge of the cut, there was a darkened color as if the flesh had been opened and cauterized with a surgical cauterizing blade. I cut tissue samples from the hard, darker edge. Later, I viewed the tissue under a microscope. At the cell level, there was discoloration and destruction consistent with changes caused by burning. Most amazing was the lack of blood. I have done hundreds of autopsies. You cannot cut into a body without getting some blood. But there was no blood on the skin or on the ground. No blood anywhere. That impressed me the most. Then, inside the horse's chest, I remember the lack of organs. Whoever did the cutting took the horse's heart, lungs, and thyroid. The mediastinum was completely empty and dry. How do you get the heart out without blood? It was an incredible dissection of organs without any evidence of blood. Close quote. During the late 1980s and through most of the 1990s, Dr. Altshuler confirmed cooked hemoglobin and cooked collagen in the excisions of many different animal mutilations, ranging from half cats and rabbits to horses and cattle. Dr. Altshuler had me look in his laboratory microscope at mutilation tissue, and we compared it to tissue samples from known laser surgeries. Earth life is carbon-based, but there was no carbon residue on the animal mutilation tissues. In contrast, there were always small black grains of carbon on the known laser surgery tissues. As director of special projects at the CBS station in Denver, Colorado, the documentary I produced in 1979 to 1980, entitled A Strange Harvest, was about the animal mutilation mystery. And how ironic that my first October 1979 film location with the KMGH-TV crew then was in the Walsenburg and Trinidad region, and now 30 years later, I am back on the same ground investigating more mutilated animals. So far, there has been one 28-year-old cow who had given birth to a calf 3 months before her bloodless death in Weston, and a 1-week-old male calf found Tuesday morning, March 17th, in Honey, about 40 miles east of Mike Duran's dead and mutilated cow. First, the Duran Ranch in Weston. The March 8, 2009 mutilated cow is the second unusual animal death on that ranch. The first mutilation was November 1995 in the same valley pasture where Mike Duran has run a herd varying between 40 and 75 cattle over the past 15 years. Mike also has his master's degree in special education from Adams State College and now works at Trinidad High School about a half hour east of his Weston ranch. That first mutilation was a 5-year-old healthy white-faced Hereford with horns. Those horns had a strange fate in that 1995 mutilation.
You know, I found it odd right away that her udders were missing and she was turned upside down and that's not a normal death. You know, usually if a cow dies, they're on their side and they're bloated up, and predators are starting, you know, especially magpies and crows, they're starting to poke at the eyes and the soft tissue where there was nothing. And then I noticed how the horns were pulled out also. The bone was still there. The shell was pulled off the horn, just the shell. Because if you know the skull of a cow, when they grow the horns, it's also part of the bone. And if you cut the horns off, they're going to bleed. But they were not cut off. Just the shell from the horns were pulled out.
And that means the horns were there, but it was the bony part that was left sticking up?
Yes.
And that you found the outer shell of the horns lying next to that cow?
Yes, they were about 10 to 20 yards from the cow. It's like, just somebody very strong just pulled them out.
And you had seen her how many hours before then?
It was probably 16, 17 hours before that.
Did you get down and look really closely on the ground to see if there were any signs of struggle or tracks anywhere?
We looked all over. My dad spent a lot of time around the area. You know, he'd even go up at night and look, and he spent quite a bit looking for tracks, and he couldn't find anything.
Did you ask a veterinarian to come out and do a necropsy?
No, we didn't. The only thing is that I called our local game warden, and I says, can we see, any predator got her? He says, well, we can see. And we skinned it, he and I, and we did not find anything. My one question to him was, what if someone would have used a tranquilizer gun and shot her with it? And he says, well, if they did that, we would know when we skin her, because when you use a tranquilizer gun, it leaves a very big bruise.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we'll find it. If that was the case, we skinned the whole cow and we could not find nothing.
So no bruises, no evidence of a puncture mark, and no teeth marks from a natural predator?
No, nothing.
That first animal, from your point of view and the game warden's point of view, was a mysterious death.
Yes. Then the second cattle mutilation we had was on Sunday, March the 8th, 2009. I believe she was mutilated, I'm assuming Friday night, March the 6th, because on Saturday, March the 7th, when I fed my cows, I had just come from Santa Fe in the afternoon, and I went to go feed them at 3:30. And it was very windy that day, and I fed the cows by a barn. And usually, the only reason I know this cow is because she was my oldest cow, and because she had a calf, a three-month-old calf, and she was up in age. She was around 28 years old. And she had a calf, so I would feed her special. I would give her a bucket of grain every time I fed her. And we would drive away from the rest of the herd, and she'd follow, and I'd feed her alone. And she'd eat the grain, then go back and eat some of the hay. But Saturday, when I did feed them on March the 7th, I didn't see her. But it was so windy, and I was tired from the trip. I just fed the cows, and I left. Then on Sunday morning, March the 8th, about 10 o'clock in the morning when I fed the herd, I noticed that she wasn't there. With her being up in age, 28 years old for a cow, and, having a three-month-old calf, the first thing that came to my mind was that she had died. And I went looking for her, and they usually bed down up in the trees, in the pinon trees up on the side of the hill. And I searched that area, and I searched another area, and I could not find her. And then when I looked over the edge of the hill there, I noticed down in the river valley, I saw her laying next to the river. First thing that came to mind is, she just died of old age. So when I went and I checked on her, when I looked at her belly, it kind of seemed weird. So when I picked up her leg, I noticed that her single udder with the four teats was removed. The first thing that came back is mutilation. So I decided to look at the exterior opening of her vaginal opening, and the skin around it was also taken out. I said to myself, well, this is a mutilation. She didn't die of natural causes or old age.
This March 8th, 2009 cattle mutilation, it's the same excisions as the one in 1995 November.
Yes. The only difference is that this cow was a baldy. She did not have any horns.
Okay. And where was her calf?
Her calf was with the rest of the herd.
Is that normal that the calf would not be bleeding and trying to find the mother?
Sometimes the calf will be looking for the mother, but, you know, when I feed them, a lot of times the calf would come first, and then she would come later.
Down by the creek, the first thing I thought of when I looked at that photo was this would be a good place to look for tracks. Did you find anything unusual?
There were no tracks, and actually by her belly it was like it was mud, not even a bird in sight. And usually when there's an animal, birds are there, especially magpies and crows.
Let's go to that question that I've been trying to get to the bottom of for so long. Who or what is killing and mutilating these animals around the world and why? What do you personally think or talk about with your colleagues?
Well, some of my colleagues laugh at me, but I tell them I believe that there is people out in outer space. There's aliens or whatever. There's another life. Why they do this, I do not know. But I believe that there's another life in the universe, and I think they're so advanced that we cannot even pick them up on radar or anything.
This is a phenomenon that has been going on in both hemispheres of this planet for at least 50 or 60 years. There have been people in military, such as Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso, who worked in the Pentagon during the Eisenhower administration. And he wrote in a book before he died that the perpetrators of the global animal mutilations were, this was the phrase he used, extraterrestrial biological entities.
I think so. I would believe that.
Before we talked, it sounds like you had come to that conclusion in your mind. What has persuaded you that what is doing the animal mutilations is something from outer space?
Just because no normal human being could, especially where this cow is, it's on the side of a little cliff next to the creek. You know, no one could have just moved it there. And I saw one other. It was 2 or 3 years after the 95 incident of my own. One of my neighbors down the road, he was taking care of some cows for another neighbor who was in California. And he come up and he says, hey, he says, I got this cow and she's kind of weird. He says, you had one mutilated. He says, why don't you come with me and take a look? And when we got there, it was the same as the first one. She was on her back and with her single udder taken out. And exterior of the vaginal opening was also taken out. But what was real weird about this cow is we saw the jawbone was taken also. I found it really odd when we found that one was in a circular pattern. A lot of the oak brush was like smashed down. It looked like something landed right on it.
Right, something round.
Something round, yes, landed on that and smashed that oak brush down. And then, you know, they did their thing and then they left.
How far from the brush that was pushed down in a circular pattern was the mutilated cow?
Anywhere between 10 and 20 yards.
So really close.
Very close, yes.
And on the ground between that circle in the brush and the mutilated animal, did you all find any tracks of any kind?
We didn't see anything.
Around the time of the first mutilation back in November 1995, did you or anyone else see anything strange and unidentified in the sky or even around this most recent one on March 8th?
Back in 1995, after that first mutilation, it happened on a Saturday night. I heard and some friends had told me that some of the guards were night watchmen at the local mine, and that mine is about a mile and a half from the pasture there, that they saw around midnight that night an object that was in a triangle shape. There were three lights, like at each one of the ends, that went over the mine. And they kind of thought it was odd.
And that would have been the night that you're pretty sure that your first mutilation had to have died because you saw her alive that afternoon and found her in the morning, right?
Correct.
What about the March 8th mutilation?
No, I asked the neighbors that live close by if they had heard any noise or seen anything, and the lady that lives close by, she said she didn't see anything. But about 3 weeks ago, I was driving home from work. It was around 4:15 in the afternoon. I saw a very shiny, round shape, completely round, and it was very, very shiny in the sky, and it was moving, and I kept watching it, and I said to myself, this is not an airplane. And I kept watching, and it just all of a sudden disappeared. And that's the second time in that same area. I saw that around the little town west of Trinidad. It's on my way to Trinidad from work or to home. It's by Cokedale, and I saw that up in the sky. And about a year and a half ago, I also saw around that same area, I saw a similar object just like that and disappear also. That was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, so this one 3 weeks ago before your second mutilation, it's round, it's silver. If you extend your hand right now and you look at your fingers, what would it have taken from your hand to cover that object?
Probably my hand.
Your entire hand?
Yes.
So you're talking about looking at a round silver object in the sky big enough that it would take your hand to cover it, and this was only 3 weeks ago?
Yes.
And when you say it disappeared, what happened?
It just vanished.
It's there, it's big in the sky, and then it just...
It's like moving. It was moving. I said to myself, is that an airplane? And I said, that cannot be an airplane, because, you know, you can tell an airplane. And a lot of times airplanes also have their jet stream. And
airplanes are not round.
No. And this was just round and shiny, silver, or white, whitish silver. And it was there moving, and then I kept looking, and it just disappeared.
Did you see it vanish, meaning pop out, as you were staring at it?
As I was staring at it, I didn't see it anymore. You know, I didn't see it zoom out or anything. It was there 1 second, and the next second it was gone.
On March 15th, I collected grass, willow, and soil samples from the Duran mutilation site, which were FedExed to biophysicist W.C. Levengood in Michigan, to see if he can find evidence of energy anomalies in plants and soil near the cow's body, in contrast to samples collected far away. Based on my experiences investigating other animal mutilations, the front left leg of the Duran cow appeared to be broken. My guess is that the cow was dropped from high above down to the creek bank on the opposite side of the water from the cow pasture. Mike Duran said it was unusual to find any of his cows on the far side of the creek because their watering place was about 25 feet away on the pasture side. Being dropped from above onto the ground was first reported by sheriffs who work with veterinarians or medical people on necropsies of the strangely dead animals. Multiple broken bones means some animals have been dropped from a considerable height to where they are found dead and mutilated. I arrived back at my Albuquerque, New Mexico office from the Duran mutilation investigation on Sunday night, March 15th. 2 days later, on the morning of Tuesday, March 17th, in Honey, Colorado, about 15 miles northeast of Trinidad and about 40 miles east of Mike Duran's place, rancher Tom Miller was stunned to find a one-week-old male calf lying next to the feed bin, dead and so strangely mutilated that it might be unique in the annals of animal mutilation history. I have photographs of the young calf at my news website, www.earthfiles.com, and I have never seen anything like this one. The head is there connected to neck bones and spine, but there is very little else. No abdomen, no hide, and no internal organs. Then, at the bottom of the spine and broken hip bones, two back legs that look relatively normal were hanging only by hide. Further, both ears are cut off at the skull, leaving circular patterns of hardened skin. Both eyes and the tongue remained, which is also unusual, since the majority of animal mutilations include the removal of at least one ear and one eye, along with the removal of the tongue and jaw flesh. Tom Miller has been ranching on the same land for at least 50 years. And told me he has never seen anything like this. He said natural predators would leave a bloody, torn mess. There is no sign of blood anywhere on what is left of the one-week-old calf. Further, Mr. Miller told me the calf's mother was extremely protective of her calf and would not let anyone near him.
My cows are so protected of their calf that sometimes you can't touch that calf without that big mama cow being on top of you. And so that's the strange part of it, too. Sometimes I have to doctor my little calves, and I've got to be real careful and real quick to grab that calf and doctor it quick before that cow's on top of me. So how did this happen without the cow being just right in their face. That's a strange thing.
And what was the condition of the mother that morning when you found this completely eviscerated young calf?
Well, she was real excited, and she was bellowing. And actually, all my cows were running around, and usually they don't do that. Whenever I bring feed, they're all right there at the trough. But this morning, the whole herd, they were running back and forth like they had been spooked.
How many cows in your herd?
There's about 80 of them out there.
So 80 cows were very agitated on the morning that you found this eviscerated calf, and the mother was especially bellowing and agitated.
That's right.
And how did you calm the mother down?
Well, I don't know as if I really did much. After I fed then, most of them came back and started eating. But the mother of this calf was still going around bellowing, and later in the day, she was still there. After all of the rest of them left, she was still standing right there where I found the calf. Actually, it was pretty sad to see her there. She was just bellowing and didn't know what happened to her calf.
And could smell it probably there.
I think so, because she was standing just more or less at the spot where that calf was.
How did anyone or anything get this calf without a fight with the mother cow? And how did that one-week-old calf end up dead, with most of his body gone without blood, right next to the feed bin, far from his mother and the rest of the herd? Because the calf's hip bones were broken, Tom Miller wondered if the calf had been dropped from the air to the ground. This was the third mutilation on his ranch since the 1980s, when Tom first found a 500-pound steer with both ears, eyes, tongue, and some of the sex organs removed. His second mutilation was another young steer in 1998, in which both ears, eyes, tongue, and genitals were removed. And now the one-week-old male calf in March 2009. The bloodless, trackless nature of each animal death leaves Tom Miller's mind open to the possibility that the perpetrators are not humans.
If there's actually those aliens or whatever they are up there, and they're coming down, why are they doing that? And why would they just take portions of a calf, and what do they do with it?
And why would they drop any of the animals that appear to clearly be dropped right back to the pasture or the feedlot or wherever it was that it was taken? If it is something that's non-human, why are they returning any of these animals to be found?
Yeah, that's true. And with mine, they dropped it where I could purposely see it. You know, it could have been down in the river somewhere in the brush. I'd have maybe never found it. But it was dropped right where I had to see it. And whether that was just an accident or if it was on purpose it's strange.
And if something out there wants humans to pay attention to their intrusions, interactions with Earth life, why?
Why? Why do they do this just to animals? Or maybe they do take humans. I don't know. People are gone missing. I'll always be thinking of this, you know, or is it going to happen again tomorrow or the next day or next week?
Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso, retired from the United States Army and now deceased, wrote in his 1997 book, The Day After Roswell, quote, "In the Pentagon from 1961 to 1963, I reviewed field reports from local and state police agencies about the discoveries of dead cattle whose carcasses looked as though they had been systematically mutilated, and there were reports from people who claimed to have been abducted by aliens and experimented upon. Our intelligence organizations believed that the cattle mutilations that could not be obviously explained away as pranks, predators, or ritual slaughter were the results of interventions by extraterrestrials who were harvesting specific organs or harvesting for experimentation," close quote. Chris Zukowski, a Mutual UFO Network field investigator in Colorado, inspected Tom Miller's mutilated calf on Wednesday, March 18th, and collected tissue samples for delivery to the Colorado State University Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratories in Fort Collins for analysis. As soon as there are any test results, I will report about the extraordinary calf mutilation at my news website, www.earthfiles.com, and in an upcoming Earth Files podcast. Historically, when there have been animal mutilations in one geographic region, there might be several more over the next few months. So I hope viewers and listeners will contact me about any new mutilation reports at my email address, earthfiles@earthfiles.com.
Week after week, you hear us talk about trans-world antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. As a Radio Disclosure listener, we need to hear from you. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what you think about this radio program. Do you have some ideas, some people that you'd like to hear on Radio Disclosure, or some subjects that you'd like to hear covered? Let us know. Go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. You'll find a place where you can send us an email. Now, the website is still under construction, so please don't mind our mess. Tell us what city you're listening in, what kind of radio you're using, and how's the signal coming in. Once again, go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure. And now back to Matt Aaron and his guest, Dr. Jason Rand, on Radio Disclosure.
Welcome to Radio Disclosure. I'm Matt Aaron. I'm talking with Jason Rand. He's got an interesting book out. And I've skimmed through it, and I've seen all sorts of crazy and creepy things. And I guess I should start by saying, hello, Jason. How are you doing today?
Hello, my friend, and thank you for having me on, Matt. Creepy, scary, yeah, it's all of that, but at the same time, it's very sober research. I had to read over 350 books as resources and references, and there's a bibliography at the back of the book. What you see when you get this book in your hand, you go, oh my God, maybe it's true. And by the time you get done reading it, I'll take you through all the storylines, bring you right up to 2012, all about the end of time, about the Mayan prophecies, and about the religious aspects of it, and what does it have to do with the book of Revelation, and why does it point to chapter 8, verse 11, where it says, and the name of the star was Wormwood. See, this is a real big, thick, fat story package. So you have to tell me where you want me to go into it for you, and I will be able to jump in. You know, if you say, "Well, let's start here," I'll start there with you.
Well, let's start here for a second. A lot of people have been watching this stuff on the History Channel about the Mayan calendar, and
yep. They had a great one on 2 weeks ago.
Yes,
3 weeks ago.
Yes, and
yes.
My question
it was all about 2012.
My question is this:
yes,
you watching all this stuff, and you know, some people say it's the end of the world, and so on and so forth, according to the Mayans. What did the Mayans actually say?
They didn't say it was the end of the world. It was the end of time. See, everybody gets it mixed up. It's not so complicated if you get the facts straight.
Now, hold on. You just said it's the end of time?
Yes, and they're talking about cosmic time, you see. We're going to have to zigzag paranormal here. Are you okay with that?
Oh, yes.
All right. Just assume that the Mayans, for all intent and purposes, were totally freaking out of their minds because they talked about things and they did things that were both controversial, but at the same time, they had a grasp on what is known as cosmology, the subject of cosmology. They were profound in their inborn, sometimes self-taught, but ET-inspired knowledge of cosmology. They knew things about time and space and the universe and the planets and the coming disasters than anyone else did, because they got their information not necessarily from here. I believe that there has been extraterrestrial intervention. You can call it angelic, you can call it demonistic, whatever you want to call it. There have been countless intelligences communicating with the citizens of Earth. It stands to reason, if you only understood the complexity and the beauty and the symmetry of how our galaxy operates.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, did you know that besides our Milky Way galaxy, they estimate there might be, are you sitting down, 100 billion additional galaxies.
100 billion additional galaxies?
Correct.
What do you think the chances of life being out there is?
Well, I don't know. To hear some of the, you know, stories today, the Earth is still flat, and it's only about 6,500 years old. And I know that doesn't sound nice to the religious people, but I'm talking about in practical time. I'm not talking about religion or theosophy of time. I'm talking about real, honest-to-goodness cosmic time like was known to the Mayans, okay? See, we live at a time right now, you and I, we're experiencing, even this evening, we're experiencing an opportunity which only comes once in a person's lifetime, and that is people like you, myself, your audience, we're all going to go through a change of cosmogonic significance on or about December 21st, 2012, because our solar system will be going into a new alignment phase, and it's going to be entering at a new place, crossing the plane of the ecliptic of our galaxy, the Milky Way.
Now, I have to stop.
A lot of these things are very complicated, and I wanted to paint them in broad stroke rather than get tugged down on all the details.
Now, I was going to ask you, I mean, what you just said was an extreme mouthful, and I'm trying to put that all together in a package.
Can I do it slower?
Let me
try it one more time, but real simple. Look. We're leaving one age and going into another age. Okay, this has been predicted for eons and eons of time. We're living in an exciting time. Our planet, our solar system, our entire galaxy is going through a huge cosmic change. There's only one constant point of reality for the universe, and that one constant point is in one word, change. The universe is constantly, immediately changing, even as we speak, as is our bodies, as is our planet, as is the sun. Now, when this event happens, it just happens to coincide on a date on or about December 21st, 2012, which has been called out in countless other prophecies and religious concepts and constructs, and it's on cave dwellings. It goes on and on and on and on. It's in the total consciousness of the planet right now because it's what's known as a reality of fact. These things are taking place. They are happening. Our weather is drastically changing. The financial collapse of the planet may soon overtake it. There could be an outbreak of horror and terror violence if Iran or some of the other countries make a play against Israel, because Israel will fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all called for in Scripture, Old and New Testament alike. So I'm not talking any gloom and doom. I'm not talking untruths. I'm not making up things, and I'm not fabricating realities. Everything that I've talked about in the last 5 to 10 minutes with you is all based on things that are actually happening right now as we speak.
Albie, can you give me any examples of right now of things we're seeing that are going to be amplified in 2012?
Okay, let's just jump back 10 days, 2 weeks. We just had a huge asteroid come plummeting through between us and the moon. And they're telling us they only had 3 days' warning.
3 days?
How could it be that we can track 30,000 pieces of space debris as big as an inch and know where they're at, and they don't see a huge asteroid coming at us?
You're telling me we only had 3 days' warning.
The government announced that.
Wow.
It was on the newscast. I heard it myself.
Wow.
Look it up. Just Google it up. Near asteroid, you know, passing, blah, blah. You'll get the whole story. Now, that scares me in a way, but it also doesn't scare me in a way, because they handled it beautifully. They didn't panic the public. They knew it wasn't going to impact the planet. Didn't cause us any real effects. So they just let it come and go and say, oh, my gosh, it just snuck through here. We never saw it. But the worrisome part is they better have seen it. It would really terrify me if that was true, that they didn't see it coming.
Now,
which means that it was traveling at a rate of speed way beyond anything we're used to tracking. Go ahead, sir.
Now, you're talking about in some effects and changes in the fall of 2009, and then mm-hmm. those will be amplified in 2012. Mm-hmm.
You're beginning to see those effects already. Mount Readout in Alaska
mm-hmm.
started, okay? We've had two or three now violent undersea volcanic eruptions. The latest one was just about a week ago off Tonga, and it had the impact of power of like 100 atomic bombs when it blew off. Now, we could be expecting more of these. I'm thinking that as we creep toward September, October, November of 2009, we're going to see an increased violent shifting of weather patterns and natural disasters. What I most fear is an earthquake, and I most fear it on the west coast of the United States, because that's the one that's set to go next. It's been cranking itself up in little bits and pieces now for the last 25 years. I personally lived through and suffered through the Northridge quake in 1994, okay? I can tell you that earthquakes are real. I can tell you that they're violent, and I can tell you that they can kill you. Now, none of this is being said to frighten anybody. Let's play that part again. What I want everybody to understand is that the handwriting's on the wall. All you have to do is read the newspaper, turn on the Weather Channel. By the way, on the Weather Channel, you used to hear about nothing but good weather, nice weather, right? Now, 99% of its content are storm warnings and blizzard conditions and hurricane conditions and tornado conditions and earthquakes and planes not being able to fly near Anchorage. I mean, it's getting to be more and more interesting every day. So all we have to do, and I've been tracking this since 1982, it's all in the book. I take you through the history of why it all built up. I take you to where we were probably going, and then I place you there and tell you what to expect. Now, if nothing happens of any major consequence, either this spring, this summer, or this fall, or heck, I'll even go, if it doesn't even happen before Christmas, I say we may be out of the clear. But if we're not, it could be 6 months later that this thing happens. Why? Simply because these are solar dynamics at work. These are gravitational forces and electromagnetic fields that have never been experienced by either the sun or any of the other planets or the Earth. Keep in mind, everything out there is governed by the forces that they rub against, touch against, or are passed by.
Mm-hmm.
If any large objects had suddenly passed near our sun, of course there would be dynamic, destructive situations. It would throw the balance of the sun out of whack. Then when the sun's balance goes out of whack, then so does all of the planets. All of the gravitational fields change. All the orbits start to spin wrong, possibly. Things drop out of space. So we have to be totally understanding that we believe there is a large solar object. We call it Wormwood. It's on the front of the book, mentioned in Chapter 8, Verse 11, and the name of the star was Wormwood. We think that that is the object that is now about ready to raise its ugly head.
What is wormwood? I mean, I keep
wormwood
hearing...
is we believe it's a small brown dwarf star. Okay, let's go there real quick.
What is a dwarf star? I have not.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you the whole thing. Okay, a brown dwarf star is usually referred to as a star that either had fusion at one time and burned out or blew up, or that never ignited to the fusion stage from the molten stage. Do you follow me?
So what's your are you saying that this star could just ignite?
No. It can't. It's lost the capacity to ignite. You see, it's a smoldering brown dwarf. It's a dead, smoldering star that either lost its luminosity or never ever gained it in the first place. Now, where did it come from? That's the next question. All right, I'm going to plunge back about 6.5 billion years ago to when we presently believe today that our solar system had its beginnings, about 6.5 billion years ago. The sun ignited, it was fused, it was ignited by something, the Big Bang, whatever it was, ignited it. And it then took about 1.5 to 2 billion years to form the 12 planets, and we believe that our star system was originally designed as a binary star system, a system having two stars. Usually there's a primary star, like our luminous sun that we have, and there's usually a smaller, totally in control of the big sun, little sun. Mm-hmm. We believe that this little sun existed at the time that the 12 planets were created. And the reason was that we believe that the way this solar system was designed, there might have been life on planets. Okay, let's assume that Mercury is just absolutely too hot to have life. The next one in, I believe, is Venus. Okay, now Venus, they believe at one time, was in a range where it could have been sustained by a little smaller sun or possibly by the main sun. And then, of course, there's Earth. And then beyond us is Mars. And everybody believes at one time that Mars had life on it. I mean, it's in every science fiction story you ever read, every Star Trek episode you ever see. So if this was a small binary star, this little star was part of the binary star system, we believe that about, 4.5 billion years ago, give or take 500,000 years, a large errant space object somehow came out of the void of space and smashed headlong into our solar system. Now, in order to think about how to view the solar system, pretend that you're out on a space platform looking down on our entire solar system with all the planets in their in their proper order, and you see the asteroid belt, and you see this. You see this whole planetary system in your mind's eye. The sun's in the center, and it's all twirling in a big, beautiful circle, but it's going counterclockwise, right? Don't think of it going clockwise. Our entire solar system dynamics obey the counterclockwise motion. Okay, so that's how it all revolves. Now, we believe this object... Keep in mind, you're looking at it. By the way, when you look down on it from somewhere else in our galaxy, it would look like a flat pancake, but you see it in 3D with mm-hmm. the planets and the sun. But it's flat. That's called the plane of the ecliptic. The plane of the ecliptic. Now, to try to re-understand what I said about what was happening to our solar system, just imagine that the Milky Way galaxy is also contains an ecliptic plane. If you look at, you've seen pictures of the galaxy, haven't you? It looks like a huge spinning wheel, doesn't it?
Yes.
Looks like one huge, beautiful, unbelievably complex wheel. And guess what direction it spins?
Counterclockwise.
Isn't that interesting? No one knows why. At least I don't know why. So maybe that's why a lot of the planets and the suns with these various solar systems go in a counterclockwise motion. So let's assume that this big, terrible, nasty monster rock comes smashing through the solar system, ripping right through its ecliptic plane, in other words, like tearing through it like a buzzsaw. And we believe that it was coming in a clockwise motion. So what dynamic are we now setting up?
I have
two cars heading toward each other on a one-way one-lane highway, right? We believe that this large object, who knows how big, could be small planetary size, smashes into one of the bigger rocky planets, which was known in time as Marduk. Marduk fractures into billions and trillions and billions of pieces, soon forming, in about a half a billion years, what's known now as the asteroid belt that floats between Mars and Jupiter. Now, another large piece smashes into an Earth-like planet called Tiamat. So I'm going to then jump to the conclusion that Earth was probably Tiamat at that point, and that would account for the fact that something disturbed the formation of the continents. And when this thing hit, it hit with such force that it gouged out a large piece of magma plasma from inside the newly born Earth, and that's probably what became our moon, because many of the same kind of features and rocks and evidence points to the fact that moon probably had Earth substance. Then that would also account for the deep hole in the Pacific. The Pacific is a very deep ocean, as you know, and it would also account for the fact that the planet, the land, seemed to have been smashed together, because when it was all said and done, there was one huge landmass called Pangaea. And then Pangaea eventually started separating, and today we have the multiple continents, we have the oceans in between. So, let's just say that everything I'm telling you is true. Even if it's only a part of it is true, it's got to make some sense.
You're listening to Radio Disclosure, and our guest this week, Dr. Jason Rand, and his book on Planet X and the Mayan calendar. The host is Matt Aaron, and we'll be right back. Right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about trans-world antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW-2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW-2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW-2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. As a Radio Disclosure listener, we need to hear from you. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what you think about this radio program. Do you have some ideas, some people that you'd like to hear on Radio Disclosure, or some subjects that you'd like to hear covered? Let us know. Go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. You'll find a place where you can send us an email. Now, the website is still under construction, so please don't mind our mess. Tell us what city you're listening in, what kind of radio you're using, and how's the signal coming in. Once again, go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure. And now back to Matt Aaron and his guest, Dr. Jason Rand, on Radio Disclosure.
So let's keep going. So this collision occurs. The Earth is hit. Mars is probably damaged. Mars probably had early life growing on it, because everyone believes that there was life on Mars. And something might have hit Venus and killed it. Who knows? Another large piece flies off. Unfortunately, it's heading directly for the actual position of the sun. And we believe that this huge cosmic rock, this awful death messenger from space, smashes head on into our little baby sun with such force that it spun it 180 degrees on its axis and sent it out into a long, lean, skinny, elliptical orbit about 36 to 4,000 years in length. That's how long it takes to go to its perigee and apogee positions and then come back to revisit the solar system, to revisit its mother and the rest of the planets, which it hasn't seen for 36 to 4,000 years. Now, wouldn't that make for a great science fiction television series?
Most definitely. You know, yeah. I want to ask a question here. I'm going to take a quick break with you. But when we get back, I'm going to ask this question. Is there any evidence on Earth that this thing was here? And from what you're saying,
thousands and thousands of artifacts and cave paintings. And yes. I can say yes.
Let's touch
we'll
on that.
We'll get into that if you want to afterwards.
We'll touch into that just here in a few moments.
Okay.
You're listening to Radio Disclosure. Let's roll.
You're listening to Radio Disclosure. And our guest this week, Dr. Jason Rand, and his book on Planet X and the Mayan calendar. The host is Matt Aaron, and we'll be right back right after this. Since the beginning of time and across the history of radio broadcasting, there's only one radio station that has ever earned a full-length documentary dedicated totally and completely to its rise to a pinnacle never before achieved by any radio station and its fall. This is a story of what happened when the most legendary programming genius of all time takes the reins of an obscure Canadian radio station in the small city of Windsor, Canada, and creates a radio legend that rocked the Motor City, the USA, and half a continent.
Well, that does it for Big Tom Rivers, 1971, and Hank O'Neill. Starts a brand new year next at CKLW. For the last time this year, I will say to you, rock on, Bubba!
Ladies and gentlemen, the beat goes on.
CKLW.
2020 news guys, they were disc jockeys without music. Bum, bum, bum. And everybody knew that something was going to happen. You knew something was going to happen.
Motor City Mayor Roman Gribbs has a mad on for an unidentified rapist, a butcher knife-wielding pervert cornered a secretary in the elevator at Detroit City County Building and rode her to the vacant seventh floor and proceeded to sexually assault her. Guards are now being considered for future surveillance of the crime-stained seventh floor. Lee Marshall, 2020 News.
Now, Markham Street Productions takes you there as you relive the rise and fall of
the Big HCKLW, the Motor City.
You can now own your own copy of this new DVD documentary, Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 from Markham Street Productions. The special edition DVD of this award-winning feature-length documentary includes extra scenes, outtakes, photos, and special features. Radio Revolution, the Rise and Fall of the Big 8 is now available for only $29.95 plus shipping. Go to RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com. Order now while supply lasts. RadioRevolutionDVD.com. That's RadioRevolutionDVD.com.
And the hits just keep on coming.
CKLW.
Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is Tux-Support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Linux, the Linux operating system. Tux-Support.com. Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it, one word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's T-U-X-S-U-P-P-O-R-T. .com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Radio Disclosure, brought to you by Trans World Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, Tux-support.com, PMC Science, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributor for the finest in amateur radio equipment. And now back to Matt Aaron and his guest, Dr. Jason Rand, on Radio Disclosure.
Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. The subject matter is, what's going to happen in 2012? And I've got the expert here on the phone with me right now, Mr. Jason You've written
Hello,
a book.
Sir. We're back.
You've written a book, and we're talking about an evil mass of something. I got, I think, about 10% of that, but from what I got from it, there's a mean dead star that's flying around in our galaxy that
can cause the Death Star. Where do you think Lucas got the name of that awful monster machine that they built? They called it the Death Star. It's been called the Death Star in almost every nomenclature all the way back to 100,000 years ago.
Wow.
Indications that this thing was seen streaking through the sky. They always do it in red and black with a long red tail.
Wow. Now, you were saying that this thing has an orbit that passes by 3,600 years.
About somewhere between 3,600 and 4,000. No one understands its celestial mechanics because we've never studied one up close. I think we're going to get a chance to do that real quick. And that's why the Hubble's been refurbished. They built that big telescope down at the South Pole. Boy, now you got me going, Matt.
Now, I have to ask this question.
Mm-hmm.
What are the effects, and can history from the past give us a glimpse into what has happened before when this thing passed through?
Continent shifting, tidal waves, sunspot activity, solar flares, forest fires, howling winds, hurricanes have happened, earthquakes of huge magnitude. You see,
is this where the story of Noah could have came from?
Yes. We figure that the story of Noah, the Great Flood, probably was back about 10,500 years, not a lot further back than we believe, because, you see, the way they were calculating time then is different than we calculate time now. But somewhere between, let's say, between 8,000 and 10,000 years ago, there was the Great Flood, you see?
Wow.
And this could have been brought upon by drastic changes to the Earth's atmospheric conditions causing prolonged periods of rain, because we don't know. This thing does different things at different times. We go through the whole thing in the book. I'll give you some effects that have just recently happened. Between 204 and 205 Christmas, that awful 9.0 earthquake off Java and Indonesia, and 395,000 people lost their lives in that tsunami. And it all happened in 45 minutes. Now, there have been growing signs now. Mount Readout, are you aware that Alaska, the volcano in Alaska has now started its eruptions? Were you following that?
No, I was not.
Okay. Mount Readout may be the first of the volcanoes up in the Alaska region, going all the way out on that little isthmus of land that goes out toward Russia. We think that the Ring of Fire is now coming to life. The Ring of Fire is about 1,250 to 1,300 known active or post-active volcanic vents that are called undersea volcanic vents. They're actually undersea volcanoes. One just blew off of Tonga the other day with the explosive force of 100 million atom bombs. 100 million atom bombs.
Wow.
And it shook the planet, but nobody reported it. When an object like that goes off, Matt, it shakes the crustal portions of the planet because it's all connected, you see. Now, this was undersea. So we have to be really understanding of what we're getting into. There could be an increased period of storms coming this spring. I'm surprised, frankly, and I'm pleased that we haven't had any tornadoes of any length or size recently. We should be starting into the tornado season any time now. I'm hoping that it's not going to be bad, but if it is, it'll then indicate that we're going to probably have a very bad season. For some reason, they seem to be tied in together. The worst the tornado season, the worst is the hurricane season.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting statistic, and all this can be found on the Internet, by the way.
So what you're saying is that we can have atmospheric changes.
Yep.
We're going to have...
We could have. All of these are probables. We have no criteria. We have no textbook. We have no manual. We've got nobody that's done this before. And by the way, I'm not alone in all this. There are about 100 other books written on topic. Not specifically like mine, on topic, and it'll give you a great variety in various positions to examine regarding this phenomena. But the thing is, it's worldwide now. It's not just the United States Internet. It's all over. All the countries of the world are now tied up into this insane thing about 2012 and the end of time and the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. It is a change of cosmic time.
Question? So the question I have to ask is, what can people do if they're caught in a situation that they're not ready, or if they want to get ready?
Okay, first of all, you don't want to be caught not ready. So let's establish that right now. So as of this point of this reference in your question, let's assume that your listeners are gonna just listen to one good idea. And that comes from me to you and the audience, and that is this. If you don't do anything else in the next 24 hours, if you take anything that you and I are talking about seriously, sometime within the next 24 hours, sit down with a pad and a pencil, a piece of paper, a couple pieces of paper, and you write down your 10 most needed priorities should disaster suddenly strike. Are you ready? Do you have food? Do you have bandages? Do you know that you will not be, that you, it would take you 4 or 5 or 6 pages to detail all the things that you would need to be thinking about should a major earthquake tear apart Los Angeles, should a major, some kind of a tidal wave sweep through New York or the Florida, wipe Florida off. What would we do? Okay, you're in Nashville, right?
Yes.
What would you do? What do you think would be the attitude and the disposition of the atmosphere in Nashville, Tennessee, if suddenly the power grid was down for 3 weeks? No food, no preservatives, no electricity, no power to generate, nothing. I don't think it would be pretty, would it?
No, it would not. It would be chaos and panic.
Absolutely. So why would anything that I'm saying now be so strange or so awful that you wouldn't want to at least contemplate it? Because what would you do? What would you do? If tonight, your power grid went out and it couldn't be turned on for just 2 days, how's that? Let's just play the game for 2 days, Matt. Your refrigerator stuff is gone, you're irritated, you're not heating your house, or it's too hot, you know what I'm saying? No streetlights, there's nothing.
Can't get gas at the gas station.
You couldn't do anything, you're shut down. That's what we're talking about being prepared. Now, we have the last three chapters in the book. One talks about everything about the government, what they know, what they don't know, why they're doing what they're doing, what they should be doing, what they're not doing. And we talk about personal preparedness. Take you all through it. With families, non-families, single people, grandma, grandpa, aunt and uncle, church groups. Then we take you through a personal preparation of suggested foods and articles of clothing. Not to scare anybody, Matt, not the point. Everybody would be so wasteful of reading the book if that's all they got out of it. All I want to do is get the word out. And guess what, Matt? If nothing happens, if not one single thing develops and everything is fine, what's wrong with getting prepared in case it suddenly does go wrong?
Makes perfect sense.
Total sense. You've already spent the money, so spend it wisely. Canned goods.
So, Jason,
battery.
Where can they get your book if someone is interested in writing it?
Just go to any bookstore and ask for it, Amazon.com. Just Google up The Return of Planet X, or just Google up Jason Rand. It'll all come up. Our website, I got an 800 number. Can I give that?
Sure.
Okay. By the way, everything that you and I talked about and are talking about tonight is all covered in the book. It's called Return of Planet X. You can get it at 1-800-247-6553. That's 1-800-247-6553. We got a great website, real simple, www.returnofplanetx.com, and there's a hyphen between the T and the X. Returnofplanetx.com with a hyphen.
Sounds great. Well, hold on just a second, Jason. We're going to come back to you, and I'm going to ask, I guess, some more difficult questions. And
Hey, bring it on, brother. Bring it on.
I've got to ask some questions about aliens and some of your belief systems and how that plays out. We'll
sure.
be right back.
That's a full discussion right there, but let's jump in, okay? All right.
Here we go.
Okay.
Welcome back to Radio Disclosure. I'm talking to Jason Rand. He's got a book out, Return of Planet X. You can get it anywhere. And not only is it about 2012, but it helps people understand that it's not the end of time, as some people have said. It's more or less a change. And we were talking earlier about the fact that it could be very dangerous if this phenomenon, this dead star, decides to throw out some space cosmic rays. It would take down our satellites. You wouldn't have GPS. You wouldn't have cell phones. You wouldn't have pagers. The power grid would probably go down. That's almost a given. And he has suggested to go up and get his book and read and see. And even if he's half wrong, why not be prepared? Even if it's only for a day, why not be prepared? And Jason is saying that we're already seeing effects, and I'm going to move into the next portion of the interview. I was reading some interesting information here. What do you think about UFOs in general? I mean, do you think extraterrestrial, or aliens? I think the word aliens is used in a joking manner too much, but do you think the aliens are interested in what's going to happen to planet Earth?
Okay, well, let's establish the fact of whether there are or aren't aliens or extraterrestrials or intelligent beings. Should we do that first?
Sure.
Okay. Yes, they are. Okay. I'm not sure they're the kind of science fiction and Gene Roddenberry and Star Trek and all of that. However, if they are intelligent beings from outer space, and if they are somehow advanced beings, well, I guess they are called what? Extraterrestrials. Now, why is that? Well, because they're not from here. They're extraterrestrial. Our Earth being terra-terrestrial. Now, I could probably argue the point and win hands down that they do exist. It's been too well documented throughout history. It's on Cave Dwelling. Once again, just read the prophecies. Just go to the legends. Just read the books. Just do your homework. Go to the internet and you'll go, wow, I never knew about all that stuff was real out there. And yes, there are UFOs. There have been UFOs sighted on this planet by mankind since they were first running around in sheepskins.
Do you believe there's evidence?
It's well done. People just have to read.
Do you believe there's evidence of UFOs in the Bible?
Of course, it's the Bible. Old and New Testament are loaded with it. Some say that if you look at Da Vinci's painting of the Last Supper, you'll find a UFO hovering in the background, and I think I've seen that.
Really?
Yes. So you see, no, the phenomenon's not new. Yes, everybody misunderstands it, and yes, the government's been covering it up, but the good thing about that is the best-kept secret is one that you try not to keep a secret. Why do you think that is? Because then the secret is no longer a secret, and everybody finds out about it on their own. Isn't that totally brilliant? You
yes.
get the point?
Yes.
You got this huge, terrible, dark secret, and yes, you leak it. And then you don't do another thing about it. You just let it go. And because it's supposed to be such a big top secret, everybody will flush out the information. Everybody knows UFOs exist. Will you give me a break? 86%. If you were to take a poll these days, I think the last one was like 82% of the American public, you know, one of the big pollsters. Of course everybody believes in UFOs and ETs. And yes, they believe that they've been visiting here. And yes, that there's probably good and bad ones. But so what? Yeah, everybody knows that there's flying saucers. Too many people see them. By the way, it's our westernized, civilized buddies, you know, our Western culture friends, the five of us. We're the only ones that think it should be kept secret from the public. Every country in Europe, Mexico, Central America, oh, my God, Mexico. Mexico's such a beehive of UFO activity that it makes you crazy. Russia, I'm a part of a Russian organization, and we investigate UFOs and stuff. I'm affiliated with people there. China, very open. Japan, oh, they have UFO watching sessions over certain places of the islands where they come over and the UFOs play games. But you see, it's too well known to talk about it, so it's no longer a secret. Yes, there's going to be a huge amount of UFO visuals. I believe there'll be some significant landings. I think that we're going to start seeing the really, 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 really large, large ships, not the little baby ones, you know, that dart in and around. They look like little flying saucers, and I think all that from the 50s, 60s, 70s, all that's gone. Now we're seeing huge web-shaped ships. We're seeing huge cigar-shaped ships. We're seeing triangular ships. So I believe that there is something to this business of all the Star Trekky people and all the people into the New Age movement, in that there's going to be some kind of an extraterrestrial presence made and felt, but more importantly, that we're going to become the subject of an interaction with them. And I think that they are actually going to be, as they have done countless of times before, read the book, they will be taking off huge, huge groups and contingents of people who are ready to live a more spiritual life. And I think that the planet will then be allowed after that to de-escalate, just like, you see, the planet right now is imploding. We just don't realize it. The interior body of the planet, including its magma core and all the volcanoes, they're all getting ready to spit. Where our weather patterns are caving in. We can't talk about it openly, but some of us need to talk about it because we believe that we're on the edge of this disaster period. And then, to make things even more complicated, we're wrestling with this global financial collapse. And by the way, I think it's really real. I don't think any of this is made up. It's too desperate. If they were making all this up, I would say it's the best game they've ever played, okay? But I think all the countries are in trouble. I think all the countries are aware of it. Most of the other countries are making preparations for it, and I believe that we are. Now, I'll tell you something that you probably won't hear anywhere else, and it's only my own opinion and my own idea. I'm not repeating it because I'm telling it to you fresh from my head. I think that what the government is doing now with all this huge printing of the money may in fact be a very brilliant plan in disguise, and they're taking advantage of the banking system problems and the stock market problems to stockpile money, print it up, have it in vaults. Why? Because if there should be a major disruption to the U.S. economy and we don't have electricity and stuff, you can't print money, can you?
No, you cannot.
But if you have it in a vault somewhere, along with gold, to hopefully back it up, you're suddenly king dog again, aren't you? You're king dog again. Even though the money may not be worth as much as it once was, at least you've got the money. And now that China and Russia are pushing to crush the dollar, you are aware of that, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
Okay, now, if they succeed in crushing the dollar, it'll have to be the euro, which is already established, or a brand new currency that both China and Russia will inaugurate together. Now, I think that they may be stockpiling money, and lots of it, and good for them. Maybe they are doing something right, and maybe we ought to try to figure it out. Now, I bet nobody's going to go on TV on Fox News and talk about that now, will they?
Probably not.
Well, if they look and investigate, guess what? That's what they're going to find.
There's a spatial, can I call it a spatial anomaly?
You could call it that. That's straight out of Star Trek.
Thank you. I am a closet Trekkie, as some people.
By the way, I was good friends with Gene Roddenberry. I had a chance to spend a whole week with him back in 1974 in Miami, Florida, and then I stayed friends with him, and I used to go visit him, and I've even had a ride in his red Corvette one day. We would meet at this Greek restaurant that was at La Cienega, and I can't remember the cross street. Anyway, It was a great time. He was a great man, and he taught me an awful lot, and I'm very humbled in knowing him.
I have to ask this question. Do you think Gene Roddenberry was ever influenced by...
He was a child contactee, as I am.
Really?
Yes. Oh, I've had many talks with him about it. Where do you think he got all that stuff? Where do you think he got all that technology from? You've got to be thinking more seriously. He just didn't invent that stuff. He had notes on it. He said he's got... Well, he's dead now, of course. And by the way, his wife, Majel, died just recently. Majel played the mother of the empath.
Really?
Yes. Yes, that was Majel. That was his wife. She appeared in almost every other program that he ever produced. She wanted to be a big-time actress. She did do a lot of good acting, but then she somehow fell away from it, and then Gene got involved in the productions, so they worked out a deal together. Oh, she played many different parts, but we're way off target.
Well, I have to get back to this.
Go ahead.
You say a child, how did you phrase that again?
I like many others, became childhood contactees at very early ages. You see, I'm part of a program. How much time do we have?
We've got plenty. Go ahead.
We have. All right. Here's the deal. Okay. Wow, we're covering a lot of ground here, aren't we? Is that okay?
Yes, that's fine. I mean,
you're asking the questions. I'm just answering them.
I mean, to me, this sounds extraordinary. That Star Trek, and maybe many other science fiction things, including Stargate, could have been evolved from.
Of course.
An experience not from this world. I mean, I'm sorry. I have to touch on this real quick, but go ahead.
I was part of a... Okay. Let's jump back to my early childhood. Hey, do you know what a walk-in is?
Not a clue.
Have you ever read Ruth Montgomery?
No, sir.
Okay, Ruth Montgomery was a prolific paranormal parascience writer who I got to know real well. She's real, real famous. She was a psychic. Anyway, she wrote a whole series of books on walk-ins. These are when a human being's soul is in transition. Let's say you were hit by a car and you apparently were dead, and they got you to the hospital, and all of a sudden they resuscitate you, and you jump back into consciousness. It's thought by many that this is times when either ET forces or higher spiritual forces that we don't understand intervene, and they actually save the body. They replace the soul, a walk-in, meaning they slide one consciousness identity, one soul, as it were. You see, as bodies, we have a brain which runs the body and regulates it and provides all of its communication skills. But there is this other element called the soul, which comprises a plasma-like matter which is mostly understood by the ancients and also by the Eastern cultures. You know what I'm talking about. It's this essence that they say leaves the body a few seconds after the last breath is taken, because it's still fresh, it still has its vitality, and that it's sucked up into the God force, and the soul itself is saved. The body is then laid to rest, and at some point, we're going to be reunited with our souls. So the so-called Great Resurrection, you see? Okay, so, as a small child, my mother labored for 39 and a half hours. I was a very big baby, and I was a near breech. She was really, 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 really in trouble, and after the birth, they took me away from her, and they put her in ICU, and for like a week, they had to give her blood plasma because she lost so much blood and she was so damaged. During that time, I was put in the nursery along with five other newborns that weekend. Now, oddly enough, here's where it gets interesting. Maybe you should take notes on this. All right? I was born on Mother's Day, May 13th, 1939. I was the first baby attributed to be born into the new 24-hour period known as Mother's Day, that Sunday. However, when they put us into the nursery, there was also going on a citywide nurses' strike. There were no normal nurses on duty at any of the hospitals or any of the hospices or anything. And they had all these young student nurses being supervised by the hotel management, who were not doctors and nurses, they're just management. So what happened was that out of the five babies that were in the nursery that weekend, three of them died. I survived and a little girl survived, but we were both badly damaged. What happened was back then, Matt, when you gave a baby a bottle, you had to prick the top of the rubber. I'm sure you've heard about that or seen about that even 20 years ago. It comes with a rubber nipple, but you have to pierce it so that the baby can suck the fluid out of the bottle. Okay. These young kids just didn't know it, whatever, and so three babies starved to death. This other girl and I were badly damaged, and at one point, they wrote me off. It was like, oh, he died. That's number four. And then suddenly, I came back again. Very strange. And I got healed. That's called a walk-in. I believe that I was a walk-in, and that I have probably some kind of an ET extraterrestrial gene in me somewhere, because at the tender age of 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, I remember being distinctly involved, cognizant, fully aware of what I was doing, in a what they call a contactee scenario. A UFO ET contactee scenario. They made contact with me as a small child. Now, let's set the record straight right now. It was always with my own free will. There was never any bad stuff going on. No tampering, nothing like that. I want to get that clear up right now. I was not abducted. Not abducted. I was contacted, and I was talked through a telepathic process. I understood that I was doing. I started going on what's known as OBEs, out-of-body experiences. Now we're going real paranormal on here. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, hold on just a second, Jim.
Sure.
I gotta ask. Let me restart this. This is an edit point. Hold on just a second, Jim. We're gonna take a quick break, but after the break, I've got to figure out what is being communicated to you.
You're listening to Radio Disclosure. And our guest this week, Dr. Jason Rand, and his book on Planet X and the Mayan calendar. The host is Matt Aaron, and we'll be right back right after this. Week after week, you hear us talk about trans-world antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW-2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW-2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW-2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews. Or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. As a Radio Disclosure listener, we need to hear from you. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what you think about this radio program. Do you have some ideas? Some people that you'd like to hear on Radio Disclosure? Or some subjects that you'd like to hear covered? Let us know. Go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. You'll find a place where you can send us an email. Now, the website is still under construction, so please don't mind our mess. Tell us what city you're listening in, what kind of radio you're using, and how's the signal coming in. Once again, go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure. And now back to Matt Aaron and his guest, Dr. Jason Rand, on Radio Disclosure.
Wait, it's Jason, not Jim.
Oh, crap. All right, let me re-edit
that. You got to recut that.
Yeah.
Can you recut it?
Yeah, I'm thinking Jim Kirk. I don't know why.
That's okay. Yeah, well, he's cool. He's here. He's top-notch. I would have loved to have met him. I was a great admirer of his.
Oh, my God. I'm floor here. Hold on just a second. Let's do this again. Jason, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I've got to discuss with you what were you being told, and these out-of-body experiences. I got to ask, what kind of influence has this had on the book? And we'll be right back. Here we go. We're talking with Jason, wrote the book Return of Planet X. And what was the phrase you used just a few minutes ago? You were a child.
Contactee.
Contactee.
C-O-N-T-A-C-E. Contactee.
A child.
They contacted me.
That's
just real simple. Not abducted, I was a contactee, which meant that I was in communication with them at a very, very early age. And you say, what did they tell you? What did they talk about? I became part, in my own free will, I became part, don't forget, I probably had some ET intervention in that walk-in situation when I almost died. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So probably I was already infiltrated, and I probably already had that essence going in as I grew up into the age of 4, 5, 6, and 7, 8. So I became part of a process where they make contact with children all over the world from all ethnicities, all colors, all races, and they put us into a huge classroom situation on one of these big ships. And I distinctly remember my first recollections were just when I had turned 4 and I was hearing voices and people were talking to me. And at first I thought, I mean, listen, kids are pretty smart at 4. Have you ever talked to a 4-year-old?
Oh, yes.
They're sharp as tacks. They got the internet. You know, they got their Walkman. You know, they got their computer. 4-year-old kids today are scary, let me tell you. I love them to death. They're smart as whips. So at 4, I was super alert. And I remember the voices telling me that I had friends that I didn't know I had, and that they would like to come and visit with me, and would I like to visit with them? And it was so natural to me to have these conversations. Now, they weren't audible. They were in my head. And I'll tell you how they did it. I'll tell you how they got my attention.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the old cell phones 4, 5, 6 years ago? They would go, dee, 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 dee.
Oh, yes.
Okay, well, I would hear that in either my right or my left ear, but it wasn't a sound. It was more of a vibration inside the inner ear. It was like they tapped right into my inner ear and created the sound. That would bring to me the attention that they wanted to talk to me. If it was in the right ear, it was only for a short little do this or do that or don't do this or please be careful and blah, blah, blah. If they wanted to have a discussion or if they wanted to impart more than a sentence, I would get it in both ears. And what I would do is, I would shut down whatever I was doing, come to a complete halt of trying to control my thinking, and I would either sit down or lie down, if it was possible, and I would just open up my mind, and it would come flowing through just like on a telephone call.
What did they say to you?
I can't make it any more complicated or uncomplicated than that.
What did they say to you?
Basically, would I like to become part of a group of children who would be preparing their planet for the future? Of course, I'm giving it to you in capsule over a number of years. I mean, I can't tell you about 4 years in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I agreed, and I said that I would like to do this. There was an experimental tryout. What it is, I couldn't wait to go to bed at night. Couldn't wait to take my little bath, you know, brush my teeth and put on my jammies. And I had the top bunk. My brother had the bottom bunk. My sister had the little three-quarter. Were three kids in one room when I was small.
Mm-hmm.
And I would close my eyes, and as soon as I closed my eyes, well, of course, it would be dark in the room because we didn't have any lights on. My mother didn't believe in that. The voices would start. I'd say, okay, let's go. I would actually feel myself leaving the bed, flying through the wall, which had no feeling whatsoever, and into a flash of blue light. The next thing I know, I'd be on the ship. And I was in a classroom setting. There, my mentor and my space friend, I'll call him my space friend, his name was Alon, A-A-L-O-N. He was about my age, but much more mature. Who was he? What was he? He was a alien. No, he was an extraterrestrial life form, much like our own humanoid life form, but more oriental in stature, in height, and in look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He had total possession of speaking to me in a language, my own language, which I understood. There was a slight dialect, but not much, and it didn't bother me. Now, he was paired with me because he was also part of the project, and that we would be reunited later on in time, like what's coming up, and that all I had to do was be willing to learn and listen and take notes, and that when it was time, I would be weaned from the class, and that I would start to experience life heading up to this. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, because at that time, I accepted the mission to create this book. By the way, this isn't the first book I've written. I've written many others. I have a very interesting entertainment industry background. I'm a record producer, Golden Platinum Records, and I got Grammy nominations and film. I've done advertising, and I've been a child star. I was one of the original Cuckoo, Fran, and Ollie kids, and I've done producing and directing and all that stuff. All of this. Oh, and I have written a TV series called Reality Engineers all about this, so we'll talk about that later. The whole point is I'm only one of possibly hundreds of thousands of other people like myself,
mm-hmm.
probably all around the same age as myself right now, and probably some that are younger, who are all kind of pulling it together during these rough end times, and it's going to be my job to try to get the word out. You know, they say you know, don't prophesy in your own country because they killed the prophet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a case of prophecy because all the facts back me up, all the research. Everything in the book is documented. I've got over 2,000 references. These occur at the end of each chapter. I've got a complete bibliography. Nothing's hidden. There's no smoke and mirrors. There's no guy behind the curtain. You follow me?
Yes.
I'm up front with the book, and you can check out any of my references, and you'll find out where they came from and why I came to the conclusions I have. Now, with that said, the mission is to get to as many people as possible simply to get them prepared. I'm not going to save anybody personally. That's not my job. My job is to get the information out, and hopefully it would save millions and millions of people, but it's not my job to individually save anyone but myself.
No, I have to ask.
That selfishly. I may be on my own to do what I can do also. At least I've been forewarned with the knowledge of what's coming, you see?
Yes. I have to ask the question, in the classroom, did they describe to you the phenomenon, the planetary effects that...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got to tell you about the end. Okay. Oh, yeah, but how did I get there? And okay. Oh, geez. Oh, how do we condense 11 years into 1 minute? Okay. I went through the classroom from age 4 all the way through just before I turned 8. Actually, it was in January of when I turned 8. Everything ceased. The telecommunication ceased except for an occasional communication with Elon, and the out-of-body experiences completely ceased. I found out why later, and it was simply because I was advancing too fast, and I was becoming too old, and they didn't want to burn me out.
Mm-hmm.
I had experienced a normal kid, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old kid existence. Fall down, break a bone, you know, get on the bike, have a fight, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because during those years, I wasn't in public school. I was still home, you see?
Mm-hmm.
And so there were no outside influences that I had to deal with. Okay, now I'm going to jump to 1950. I'm now 11 years old. It's September. I'm up there on a fly-in fishing trip with my father. How that whole thing came about, that's another show, okay? I have this experience where I take my dad's boat out with all his knowledge one morning, and I get caught. I got caught in this awful, awful, awful deadly storm, and it blew my little rowboat completely across the lake. This, Matt, is a big, you can't see across it. It's one of the Ice Age lakes. It's called Lake Sesaginigak, and it's in the Attawanga Provincial Park out of in Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
It's blown out into the middle of the lake. The boat is sinking. I pass out from fright. I've lost all the tackle, everything. The boat is sinking. It's a little rowboat, big waves, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10-foot wind and everything. When I wake up, I'm not dead. At least I'm not sure if I'm alive or dead, and I'm back inside the boat, which is totally dry with all of the equipment returned in the boat. Didn't wind up losing. Even the mini bucket was there with the minnows in it.
Wow.
A pink, translucent, plexiglass-like object has settled over the boat, and whatever it is, it's bringing me toward the shore on the far side of the lake. In other words, the storm is still raging, but this thing, whatever it was, I found out eventually what it was called. And
what is it called?
It's called a barak. A barak. It's hard to pronounce, okay? I would call it a kabok.
Uh-huh.
My own personal translation for it is a kabok. A kabok is an electromagnetic device, probably an advanced technology which we still don't have today, that had the ability to take form and substance and its own form of mobility. This object, whatever it was, settled over the boat on all sides of it and brought me clearly through the storm to the shore on the far side of the lake. As soon as I got to the shore, I was put asleep. They took it away. When I woke up again, the boat was rocking gently in right by the beach, pulled the boat up on the beach, went up to sand dune, approached this huge, huge field, looked like a football field full of glowing golden grass, and I look out, and it looks like a giant hand has completely clawed away this entire piece of land and created this landing field for the ship, which eventually landed. Now, there's only one problem. With the bulrushes and the lily pads and the beach and this waving grass, it's in the middle of a Canadian forest. You follow me?
Yes.
It was real, but it was not of a dimensional form that I knew about. I knew eventually what it was, because eventually they landed, and it was my friend Elon. That's where the story gets really good. The point was, I didn't know what it was. I had no idea what was coming. I only followed the prompts that were coming into my head. It was Elon telling me, do this, do that, get up, go, go, go. So the ship lands. I'm invited on board. I'm refreshed. I did have to go to the bathroom. I was thirsty. I was hungry. And, yes, I was terrified. I had no idea what was going on or where I was going to be taken. I wasn't taken anywhere. The ship, after we got done, I left it and it took off. Point of the matter is that I didn't know, but it was only until I realized it was Elon, my friend from when I was a kid, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, that suddenly I realized, whew, because don't forget, back in the 50s, remember The Thing?
Mm-hmm.
Remember it came from outer space and all those movies?
Yes.
How about The Day the Earth Stood Still?
Very scary stuff, especially
all if... that stuff was fresh for me. I'm a kid, 11 years old, love science fiction. And what happens? I see one. I'm on one. And there are such things as aliens and ETs. Okay, story is, what I'm getting to is, I'm on board for just about 4.5, 5 hours. They had to make a major repair to something that went wrong. To go into why and how is way too long for this show. They fixed what they had to fix. I was on there for 4.5, 5 hours, the last 45 minutes to an hour, at least as I remembered it from my Mickey Mouse watch, was spent in a classroom setting. And they had what today would be called a large screen. You know the big 55, 60-inch screens?
Yes.
Well, I had saw at least a half dozen of those all set together in a 180-degree circular arc, you know, screen to screen to screen to screen to screen. And we were sitting in these two comfortable leatherish type armchairs that, okay, the program, it was a slide screen and kind of music, but not music. It was all in my head. I don't know how they projected it into my head, but I could hear and see and understand everything. The slideshow kind of thing started at the left side, and it would go screen to screen to screen to screen. You know how slides go?
Yes.
Sometimes they would be slower and longer, depending on the need to absorb what the subject was. It was all brilliantly, brilliantly produced. I saw basically the creation, you know, fast the creation of the Milky Way galaxy and how the solar systems were formed and it concentrated on suns, brought us into our solar system, the sun and the planets. That's the first time that I actually saw a schematic of what it would look like with the 12 planets and the two suns. That's why I could talk to you so glib about it, because I know the subject well. So these screens, the stories, it goes through the creation of the solar system. I'm actually shown scenes of this brown dwarf star being hit, colliding with this space object. I'm then shown the aftermath of it, and then we speed ahead through time. I'm shown some of the major events of time. I'm shown some of the geologic changes, all to give me an understanding of what it was I was going to be writing a book about. And you can see it in the book. I take you through the whole story about all this in the book, you see?
Mm-hmm.
That's why the book turned out the way it did, is because I had a great outline of things and ideas that I have been working on most of my adult life. So it took a little bit longer than 7 years to write the book. But the point of the matter is that the book reflects what happened to me and what my mission is. So at the end of it, they show me this horrendous thing coming back into the solar system, and it was going to cause great tragedy for the Earth, and they labeled it the end of time. And I thought, too good, too good. Couldn't be a better ending, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing, this is going to, are you sitting down? Because this is going to get you. The last thing that flashed onto a screen, the one that was dead center in front of me, the whole screen was one word, wormwood, W-O-R-M-W-O-O-D, wormwood. It flashed and it exploded and it was gone again. And I turned to my friend Elon, and he says, and I always get emotional when I do this, he said, he looked at me, and he said, he pointed to the screen. I'm sorry, I'm losing it, man.
Sorry.
He pointed to the screen, and he said, remember that word. And then he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, and the name of the star was Wormwood. And the name of the star was Wormwood. If you look at the bottom of my book, the very, very bottom of the cover, you have it there?
Yes, I do.
Would you read that line?
And the name of the star was Wormwood, Revelation chapter 8, verse 11.
There you go. Now, here's the interesting thing. I was born and raised Catholic. I went to an Irish Catholic school. The nuns beat the hell out of you, and the priest prayed the hell out of you, and it was communion and confession every day, 5 days a week, and then Saturday morning, and then Sunday was a two-hour mass. I was a good little Catholic child, okay? So I believed in God, and I believed the fact that if I wasn't good, I was going to go straight to you-know-where, okay? Now, having gone through these experiences as a child and realizing that there are such things as ETs and there are such things as UFOs and stuff, imagine how rough it was for me to stay in that school and be taught the things that I was being taught. But I'll not take that any further, okay? I was always the object of ridicule because I always had the answers, and I had more answers than they even knew about because I knew the questions they asked before they were asking me. Mm-hmm. And it always went back to religion. Now, with that said, I had to make a decision as I was growing older because I soon realized that I may not be just totally human. I mean, I may have some ET something in me somewhere because I've always been able to pretty much read people's thoughts and pretty much figure out what's going to happen a few seconds before it happens. It's called precognition. And I wound up with a lot of paranormal abilities that most people read about and think about and try to perfect. Okay? Now, my mission was, as these times approached, that I would start a music role, a writer's role, an author's role, and a teaching role. Well, I mentioned to you that I became the record producer and the artist and the singer and the dancer and all this stuff and the producer and the TV, radio. And then I started the writing phase. I've actually been writing books now since I was like 15, 16 years old. I've got like four or five of them written.
Mm-hmm.
Two of them are now ready to go. I'm just waiting for the right moment to publish them. This is my first published book, Return of Planet X. And they were not written in that order. They're all written out of order. It's when the book comes, you have to write it. So my job was to get this book out, get everybody up to speed, because I knew that this coming period would be what it is.
Uh-huh.
And it is precursor to the end times. We're living, Matt, in a very exciting time to be alive. Even though there's all these horrible weather things happening and the financial crisis, we're going to see the end of one age for this planet and its solar system, and we are going to be entering in a new age for everyone to try to figure out how to get it right the next time. And that's the beautiful part about it. I think we're all going to get a second chance here. Now, how's that for being loving and benevolent?
Wow. So do you believe that... you believe that there is a spiritual side, and you also believe that there is a alien side to
phenomena.
I mean, it's a little.
You said it perfectly. There's a huge spiritual side, and there's an even huger religious side. See, we just haven't really talked about it. Okay, there's a huge religious component here. All through the scriptures. I don't know if we should plunge into that part of it right now or keep on going the way we're going, because that opens up another whole thing. Okay. I'm going to give you one example. Do you have a piece of paper and a pencil? Anything in front of you?
Not really, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. I'll walk you through it, okay? I want to talk about something called numerology.
Uh-huh.
If you reduce... we've been talking about the date December 21st, 2012, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, if you reduce December 21st, 2012 down to 12-21-12, which are the right orders of linking to make the date work, 12 would be for December 21st, 2012. So it's 12-21-12. Okay, now, in numerology, every single number has a corresponding letter associated with it. 1 is A, 2 is B, 3 is C, 4 is D. Got it?
Yes.
Now, if you write out the number, the letters for the numbers 12, 21, 12, you get the following. A, B, B, A, A, B. A, B, B, A, A, B. Now, when you consider that the Hebrew language is read from right to left in reverse to the way we read English, then this date has to be transposed. In other words, flip it and turn it right upside down. So here's what you get. You get B-A, A-B, B-A. B-A, A-B, B-A. Now, the Hebrew translation is called Ba'aba. Ba'aba. Now, the Hebrew translation for Ba'aba is Father comes, Father is coming. Now, in Judeo-Christian teachings, God is the Father is God, and then there's the Son equivalent, Jesus the Son. Now, is it so coincidental that the date 12-21-2012 comes out in Hebrew to be Ba'aba? Translated means Father comes, Father is coming. Uh-oh, that sends out some bells and whistles, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You think that's just an accident that it could be preposterously considered to be, oh, come on, it's just numbers and letters, okay? Too close to the bone for me. Now, the next thing is that there are dozens and dozens and dozens of references in the Old and New Testament to the fact that God is coming back, God will return, and that he will be sending his angels and all kinds of trumpets and everything to announce his coming. And so we come to Jesus' own words on one of the Sermons on the Mount. It's taken from Matthew 24:31. I'm quoting. Now, this is Jesus talking to the multitudes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quoting Jesus. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall cast together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other, end quote. So Jesus is saying that his Father, God the Father, that God shall send God's angels with a great sound of a trumpet. Angels shall gather together God's elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. And incidentally, back in olden times, the words heaven and earth were easily transposed. It means the same thing. So you could say from one end of earth to the other. Now, when you read those kinds of pronouncements made by none other than Christ himself, you either believe all of it or you don't believe any of it, okay? You can't just pick and choose what you want to believe and what you don't want to believe. See, and I don't want you to think I'm sounding religious here. I'm not a prophet. I'm not a priest. You know, I don't have a cult. All I'm doing is stating what everyone can read for themselves from any source that they want to read. But it all comes back to a religious connection, and it all comes back to the Book of Revelation, because in that reference, I could walk you through this whole thing, and everything that I've alluded to is already in the Book of Revelation, so nothing that I've said tonight, not one single word or sentence or reference, is not contained somewhere, either in the Book of Revelation or in my book or in my references.
Wow.
I want you to understand that I want to talk about the subject as purely as possible. You see?
Yes.
But it
where
does
do,
have.
Where do we stand right now?
We're just about to open, or we already have the sixth seal. If you want to really take this and look at it, start reading it. But read it with, and don't try to read too much into it yourself. If you want to read it, there are seven sections and seven types of curses and seven vials and 777. It's all done in sevens. Okay, as is a lot of the other construction in the Bible itself,
mm-hmm.
Especially the New Testament. Segments of seven things of seven. That's another story, okay? But it does unlock a mathematical timing sequence. And another friend of mine and I are working on another book called the End Time Prophecies, where we're going to be talking about exactly where we're at, how we got there, and what's about to happen.
Uh-huh.
I think that we've probably already popped the sixth seal, and once the button is pushed, the nations of the West are going to come against Israel. There's no question about it, and there will be the Battle of Armageddon fought on the plains of Megiddo, and that's all scriptural. Once again, I'm not talking about anything that doesn't have concrete validity. Now, if that conflict begins, we know for sure that he says he's coming back.
Yes.
Because he will not allow Israel to be destroyed in its entirety. He will preserve the nation and his people, Israel. Now, it's not just that Israel that we're talking about. You do know that too, don't you? The 12 tribes of Judah will be all reunified.
Wow.
See, Israel is only one of the tribes,
mm-hmm.
the tribe of Judah. See, it's real complicated and it's real thick. Are we Job, Shirley? Oh, Shirley, my wife's not here. Okay, I think we're. I'm not sure. We're one of the seven tribes, and the next time I will have that down pat for you. Okay.
No problem. Now I want to ask this question real quick. We're running quickly out of time here.
Okay.
Where do you see us in the next 90 days?
90 days, okay. I see one of two scenarios. Things are going to get better, not only financially and politically, but the weather's going to calm down. I think that maybe we might have a decent summer. There might be a few storms, a few tornadoes, might be one or two little hurricanes. Nothing bad will slip into September, and everything can be fine. And I think maybe hopefully the financial thing will start to get better, and things will start to get okay again. Then on the other hand, we may be in for a real rough period. But we'll know within the next 30 days whether their tornadoes are going to start up, and then how soon we're going to have the first encroachment of the hurricane season coming. There's something still radically wrong. There's still a blizzard going on in the Midwest. Isn't that insane?
Yes.
And the Missouri, the river coming down the Missouri is just over flooded. It's just awful. Now we're going to feel that impact coming down the Mississippi. If 60 days come by and there's no problem, great. If 60 days come and it starts to get worse, there'll be a major jump, I think, in June or July if it's going to get bad, because that's when the hurricane season starts. And the 90 days out, we could well be into what could be a prolonged season of storms all the way to the Christmas of 2010. On the other hand, things might be okay. And if things quiet down, then I will say to you, either I've been entirely wrong about everything, or my timing is off. And if my timing is off by 3 to 6 months, I guess you'll forgive me. But it's going to be one way or the other. There's no middle ground here, do you see?
Yes, I totally do.
It's going to be okay or not. So why don't we get together maybe in 90 days or so and to talk about it and compare notes and see where we're going. How does that sound?
That sounds great. I'll definitely have you back. And once again, the name of the book is Return of Planet X. And
the 800 number is 1-800-247-6553. Get it at any bookstore, Amazon.com. Just ask for it. Google up the book. Google me up. And there you have it. Thanks so much, Matt. It's been a real pleasure.
That's no problem. And folks, you got to also remember, too, he's also got an outline, correct me if I'm wrong, in this book for you. So if you do want to do something today, you most certainly can.
Absolutely. There's a whole chapter devoted to it's called personal preparation. And then the following chapter, the last chapter of the book, talks about where to get the materials, what a 30-day sample emergency diet would be with complete nutrients and medicines and everything that you need. If you really wanted to do something, then take the book to a coffee shop somewhere and just copy those pages out and then go to the store and start making preparations. If you even started tomorrow, it would still take you 3 to 6 months to get totally prepared.
Wow.
Food, medicines, blankets, flashlights, dog food, kitty food, cat litter. I can go on and on and on and on. What would you do, like we said earlier, if Nashville went dark for, let's say, 3 days? Just 3 days.
I think my cat would be hungry.
Me? I got 4 of them, all rescues. Bye.
You're listening to Radio Disclosure.
As a Radio Disclosure listener, we need to hear from you. Let us know you're listening. Let us know what you think about this radio program. Do you have some ideas, some people that you'd like to hear on Radio Disclosure, or some subjects that you'd like to hear covered? Let us know. Go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. That's radiodisclosure.com. You'll find a place where you can send us an email. Now, the website is still under construction, so please don't mind our mess. Tell us what city you're listening in. What kind of radio you're using, and how's the signal coming in? Once again, go to the website at radiodisclosure.com. Thank you for listening to Radio Disclosure. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Radio Disclosure, brought to you by Transworld Antennas, Heil Sound, Gigaparts, Tux-Support.com, PMC Science, Markham Street Films, and Martin Lynch & Sons, your European distributor for the finest in amateur radio equipment. Well, that's going to do it for this issue of Radio Disclosure. Once again, thanks to our guests, Emmy Award-winning science reporter Linda Moulton Howe and Dr. Jason Rand. We'll be back next week, same time, same station, for Radio Disclosure.